God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Just off the bat, I just wanted to thank everybody for the notes you sent me in regards to yesterday's show. And my admission is to giving into the flesh. Not praise God, not sexually, not in terms of pornography, but in terms of human pride. I appreciate the tone of the notes and really that people were willing to share and say, hey, me too. That's a powerful, powerful phrase. When we as Christian brothers and sisters confess to one another things that we've struggled with, where the enemy's gotten at us, there's this massively powerful phrase to look at someone and say, yeah, me too. I had this happen in one of my youth groups that I'm privileged to help lead with a young man who's just so spirit-led. We're doing a series on transparency. And we're trying to help these young people develop the habits of being transparent with friends, Christian friends, of the same sex, by the way, so that they can develop the habit of holding each other to account, the discipline of that. And I just happened to mention during one of the groups, it was pretty tactically done. I mean, I did it on purpose, in other words. It was intentional. Group of, these are now 10th graders. I said in our discussion time, we do ups and downs, or highs and lows, it's called. What are your high or low of the week? And I said, yeah, my low was at a pretty significant argument with my wife. I don't remember what I said was my high. But I was watching the kids as I said this. And we went around the circle, and a boy said to me, hey, before I start, are you and your wife okay? And I said, you know what? That's manning up. You're thinking outside yourself. You're focusing on others. I really appreciate that. Yeah, we're fine. We've been, together for 28 years. We've been through some stuff. And we ran in the circle, and more boys gave their answers. And so when we began talking about transparency, I said, hey, I wanted to go back. And I'm not going to release this boy's name, because what happens in the group stays in the group. So I anonymized the group. And I went back and I said, hey, you know what? Our friend here, when he asked me that question, I said, I had admitted something to you guys, that my wife and I had an argument. What risk was I taking in being transparent with you? One of the boys said, well, we could make fun of you. I said, yeah, you could. You could make fun of any married couple because everybody argues. But yes, we're right. Well done. Thank you for saying that. Another boy said, we could get you in trouble. How? Well, we could go tell the boss pastors. Yep, you could. You could go tell the senior pastors, right? I said, why do you think I'm not concerned about that? One of the boys said, well, because you trust us. I said, well, I'm learning to trust you. And we'd have a rule here that what happens in the group stays in the group. And by the way, in terms of breaking that rule, I'm in several groups and I'm anonymizing this. And so it's about me. It's not about anyone else. I said, yeah, I'm learning to trust you and you're learning to trust me. But can I tell you something? The pastors here know more about my marriage than you would think. They know a lot of detail. And there's a lot of things that happen with couples in 28 years of marriage. So guys, there's nothing you could go tell the pastors that they don't know. I choose to do that so that godly men can help hold me to account. And it's a relief. Now, when we speak about transparency in a Christian community, of course, the Lord Jesus was pretty transparent and perfectly so at the perfect time because of who he is and was. Transparency is a way we build trust, we demonstrate it, we practice it. When there is lack of transparency in a family, it shows. The kids know. Oh, mom and dad are fine. No, they're not. I hear you guys arguing. I can see the coldness in the room. I see that you don't hold hands anymore. Now, likewise, it's not a family. Government's not family. But when a government makes a decision to lie to us, to not be transparent, it's because their interests are better served by lying. That's what they think. It is at least, at the very least, disordered. It's far more likely that it's diseased, spiritually and otherwise. So let's walk through this together. Do you remember all those claims of the government agencies who decide how elections are run, claims slavishly repeated by the Mockingbird media?
The Department of Homeland Security says the 2020 election was the most secure in American history.
The only fraud around is the fraudulent claim of the president that there was massive voter fraud.
In a statement, the DHS said there is no evidence that any voting system was deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised.
People can have faith at the end of the day that their vote counted the way they intended and that the overall result is the actual result.
President Trump, who incorrectly claimed victory hours after polls closed, has repeatedly made voter fraud allegations over the years.
So we have no evidence that votes were taken or added, and in many states, the voter tapes, of course, were erased. Okay. Now, put that aside. I'm well aware of the fact that there are dear, dear people on this network who disagree with me on this point, and they love the Lord Jesus. So on that point, that's the greater thing. I get that. I think the election, I know it was rigged. I believe it was stolen. Now, put that aside. That is not the point of this monologue. They told us safest, most secure election in history, right? And the Mockingbird media repeated it slavishly. All right, follow me here, please. So the Mockingbird media quoted cybersecurity experts who said the same thing in the same way.
The nation's top federal election infrastructure agency says this year's election was, quote, the most secure in history. In a statement, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency said, quote, there is no evidence any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. The statement goes on to read, quote, we can assure you we have the utmost confidence in the security and integrity of our elections, and you should too.
Okay, those are very carefully worded sentences. No votes added or deleted or compromised. What about the lock boxes, the drop boxes? What about the signatures that didn't match, the IDs that weren't checked, the ballots that were submitted after the election closed? What about that? See, it's outside of their statement. It lacks transparency. Here is the turn, we would say, in the storytelling business. Now the turn. Do you know who Mark Elias is? Mark Elias is a lawyer, and he used to work for Perkins Coie, which, in my judgment, disgraced itself by laundering money, as I see it, for Hillary Clinton. When she paid for opposition research that they later used to merchandise to pretend that President Trump was a Russian agent, Perkins Coie effectively laundered that money to pretend it was legal fees. And by the way, I should tell you that Perkins Coie used to be my law firm. My first startup, I was very, very thrilled, in fact, to have had Perkins Coie as my lawyer. They were great. My lawyer's name was Susan Foster. She was great. I think she probably still is. Mark Elias is now an election lawyer, effectively. You know what he's doing? He is running a group of soldiers, foot soldiers, lawyers, who appear to want to keep illegitimate voters on Nevada's vote rolls. This is from The Federalist. Now think of transparency. Safest, most secure election in history. This again from The Federalist. Among active election integrity groups, Mark Elias is a household name. He's a Democrat super lawyer and Russia hoax architect who used COVID as an excuse to rewrite election laws all across the country. But they were safe and secure. Remember that. That includes Nevada, where he helped ensure the implementation of automatic mail-in balloting and vote harvesting. Now this pirate is working feverishly to protect his ill-gotten booty, and telling the truth certainly isn't part of his game plan. His Democracy Doggett blog and podcast regularly skewer groups and organizations that are working to protect the security and integrity of our elections, including my group, Pigpen Project. And he's at it again. On August 20, one of his bloggers, Matt Cohen, scribbled a post headline, "These right-wing groups are trying to remove millions of voters around the country." He starts off with, "In June, a nascent right-wing group in Nevada sent more than 1,000 names to 10 county clerks and registrars in an attempt to get them purged from the state's voter registration." Yes, it's true. "We submitted more than 1,000 names of suspicious voters, but this wasn't an attempt to get legitimate voters purged, a scare tactic word to undermine our efforts for the voter rolls. The names were of voters who appear to have moved out of Nevada and re-registered in another state. If true, it should simply no longer be on Nevada's vote rolls. All that our submissions did was trigger a verification postcard mailing from election officials to ensure the accuracy of our information, exactly as the law requires." Mark Elias's group does not want illegitimate voters removed from the rolls, it seems. Is that transparent? Is that someone who's interested in safe and secure elections? And by the way, there's a question you can ask that completely destroys that narrative. Safe and secure election, safest, most secure. Here's the question. It goes like this. What was second place? Well, what do you mean? You said this was the safest and most secure. Which one was second place? There's no second place. They don't rank things that way. Now, the update. See, we went from the turn to the update. You know who Alejandro Mayorkas is, right? He's the disgraced, and by the way, impeached but not convicted, boss man of the Department of Homeland Security. We learned this week from Mark Zuckerberg, who announced that he regrets allowing the government to use him to be a censor, which is illegal. It's becoming a joint state actor. He violated our civil rights, Mark Zuckerberg did, because government told him to, and he chose to believe them. And he regrets that, and praise God that he's regretting it. We talked about this yesterday, but here's the update. The update is actually a moment in history. Alejandro Mayorkas said, no, we're not censoring. Listen to the whole thing, Senator Josh Hawley, and then at the end, listen to Alejandro Mayorkas. Here he is, lying under oath to the Senate. That's called perjury.
"We have example after example of this administration coordinated, apparently, according to a federal court, by your agency, pressuring, coercing social media companies to engage in censorship. Is that constitutional?"
"That is unequivocally false."
"Is what the emails show?"
"It is unequivocally false, Senator."
"You are not pressuring the big tech companies to take down accounts. You are not meeting with them to ask them to censor on your behalf."
"That is correct. We are not."
"Mr. Secretary, it has been established for years in this country, as you very well know because you're a lawyer, that the federal government may not use private third parties to engage in activities that are unconstitutional. That's exactly what you and this administration are doing. You are leveraging private companies to carry out censorship on your behalf. It's dystopian, but worse than that, it's unconstitutional."
"It's also false."
Yeah, he's a liar. Alejandro Mayorkas looked into the face of America and he lied. Mark Zuckerberg has proven this. The emails prove it. When I was sitting around with a group of 10th graders, and I chose to share the fact that I'd had an argument with my wife, a bad one, I was choosing transparency to model it for them, to give them an opportunity to be trustworthy, to show them what it's like for Christian men to help hold each other to account, to pray for one another. And this week, one of those boys came to me as we were starting our group, and he said, "Hey, before we start, I just wanted to check on you. I've been praying for you and your wife." 10th grader. We have a department head of the Department of Homeland Security who won't even afford us the respect I gave to 10th grade boys. The fact of the matter is this. The Republicans should frog march him into a jail cell. I think they could do that in the House. He won't stay in there long. It's called a pattern interrupt, a reminder, because if we don't have laws, you know what makes the rules? Force. We should choose laws or people with guns. We'll come back on The Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Do you know who David French is? I've never met him, but he had been at one point a conservative commentator and kind of in the National Review circle of things. And look, I don't know the man's soul, and I don't want to bear false witness. I mean, we can be discerning. He's now at the New York Times as an opinionist and op-ed writer. He's at the National Review Institute, been a staff writer for the National Review. David French had a very visceral reaction to President Trump in his first election campaign. Well, second, but the first major one, the one he won. And David French became effectively a never-Trumper. Fine. There are people all over who are never-Trumpers. Fine. I have friends. My sister is terrified of President Trump. Utterly. She'll confess that. She thinks everyone should be. So David French decided at one point to run against President Trump, and he admitted fully to do that simply with the idea of trying to siphon some votes away from him. He's a veteran, served our country very honorably, Operation Iraqi Freedom. I just want to be clear, this I have a full picture of this guy. He's a family man. I think he's a Lutheran. He said he was canceled by his church, by the way. David French is now very deeply committed, it seems, to left-wing politics. Very deeply committed to pushing Kamala Harris as president. Of course, this is very quixotic to me, because Kamala Harris and her non-nomination bears nothing in common with Republican form of democracy. Nothing. She is literally installed, not even as the nominee. You can't even honestly say she was nominated, because Kamala Harris was not nominated. She was placed. That would be the kindest way to put it. She was placed in that position. The reality is she seized power. That's a fact. So David French, and the reason I'm talking about him is he said something very interesting and really lacking in self-awareness. And I say this out of respect to David French. Again, I don't know him. He wrote this on Twitter-X. The next couple of months are going to be full of accusations that a person can't be a Christian and vote how they're voting. Ignore those voices. There's no credible argument that our votes define our walk with God. I don't think I agree. I don't think I agree with that. Oh, incidentally, he'd also written this at the Dispatch. This is a headline to one of his op-eds. There's no remaining Christian case for Trump. Trump discipled the church more than the church discipled Trump. Wait. Can he have that both ways? Because he's saying the next couple months are going to be full of accusations that a person can't be a Christian and vote how they're voting. Ignore those voices. There's no credible argument that our vote defines our walk with God. But he had earlier written, there's no remaining Christian case for Trump. Well, I guess, to be fair, he's not saying you can't be a Christian and vote for Trump. He's simply saying the case cannot be made. All right. Can we break this down together, please? If this statement he's made is a strong statement, it should be very, very difficult to deconstruct. I shouldn't be able to do it in three questions. And yet I can. Again, here's his statement. The next couple months are going to be full of accusations that a person can't be a Christian and vote how they're voting. Ignore those voices. There's no credible argument that our vote defines our walk with God. Okay. So I would ask this. Can a Christian vote for a Satanist to be president? What's the answer? Right. It's no. You can't. All right. Question number two. Can a Christian vote for someone who has worked in an administration where a Satanist helps run public health policy? I don't think so. Now, you may vote for Kamala Harris. I respect that. That's your decision. You probably prayed about it. This network, we don't do endorsements. I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm not telling you how to vote. We don't do that here. You're an adult, presumably. You're going to make your own choices. I assume it's been prayerful. I haven't endorsed anyone. I'm simply asking a series of questions. Third question. Is there a Satanist running part of the public health policy for the people who run Joe Biden? Yeah. There is. Now, I get this because I have friends who cannot vote for Donald Trump. Some people I deeply love. Conversation with one of my friends the other day told me, I can't. I can't get past the personality. I can't get past it. I can't get past what he says about women. I can't. So my friend's going to vote for RFK Jr., even if it's a write-in. I get it. I respect it. But this isn't what David French said. He said that your votes cannot define your walk with God. Okay. What is a nation? What is America? You can say it's a landmass. Fair enough. That's North America. North America is a landmass. It's a continent. Fair enough. What is America? People will say it's an idea. The left likes to say America is an idea. Okay. Do ideas build buildings? Do ideas fight wars? Sometimes just, sometimes otherwise. Do ideas breathe? America is people. See, there's this saying, people are policy. Now, what I promise there's a connection here. People are policy. This is what it means. You can have all sorts of beautiful words on paper, all sorts of incredible strategic plans with tactical underpinnings and action steps. You can write that all out, publish it, teach it, and then hire people who do not speak your language. And none of it will get enacted because people are policy. You could do all of the same strategic planning extraordinaire based upon numbers and measurements and calculations and interviews with customers and market analysis if it's a business and create tactical underpinnings step-by-step meticulously planned this quarter, this release, that feature. And you could hire people who are utterly incompetent. And it won't happen because people are policy. People are the nation. So let's look at our nation. Our votes don't define our walk with God. Okay. We have a government that lies to us every second of the day. The Hunter Biden laptop story is Russian propaganda. The Hunter Biden laptop just convicted Hunter Biden of crimes, the evidence therein. That was always true. Stay home, stay safe. Stay home, lengthen the pandemic. They lie to us on a daily basis. That's item one. Again, America is people. Our votes don't define our walk with God. We have voted into office people who now happen to lie to us as a course of business. You shall not lie. Shall you hire your lying done? I mean, just think of it this way. We're not to murder, but Lord, I didn't. I hired it done. I hired a hitman. I didn't do the murdering. I just paid a guy. Is that going to work on Judgment Day? You shall not lie. I didn't. I hired my lying done. See, now this could add up into, wait, I can't vote for anybody. If that's what your conscience is telling you, maybe you shouldn't. The lesser of two evils, right? I did a speech in Seattle several years ago. It was just after I left my my morning show there. And it was actually long before I was gifted with this time slot on this amazing network. Has one audience, God, family of many, that's you guys, monthly supporters, AFR.net. You make it possible for us to do this. I did this event in Seattle. I think it was about 6 months after I left the airwaves. And it was entitled, Will God Save America? And praise God, it sold out. We had a couple thousand people show up. And it was so, so refreshing to see faces, people who'd supported the show all these years. I had multiple friends come and speak. We were able to give a bunch of money to the church that hosted us. It was a great event in that regard. And I mean, candidly, we made a lot of money on that event. And in the speech, I was talking about America. And at the end, I asked people, what is America? We just went through this sequence. What is America? And I finally said to everybody in the audience, turn on the house lights. Please turn on the house lights. Look next to you. Look at the people around you. This is America. What are people? Well, we're skin. That's for sure. We're flesh. That's for sure. Internally, we're souls. Our walk with God. Our votes don't define it. We're a nation that exterminates babies on industrial scale, but our votes don't define our walk with God. Will God save America? America's a collection of souls. Are we saving them? Are we letting God save them through us? With each child that is sexually and chemically mutilated, I think our nation, this collection of people, I think we create more and more barriers between us and God. So, do our votes define our walk with God? How is our nation's walk with God? I think it's hurting. If you look at the DNC, you look at that event, and you really think about the people who were there and the things they said, I think it gives you an indicator as to how far they are from God. So I want you to hear something here. This is at the DNC, and we hear the phrase, yes, queen, about Kamala Harris. This is an example.
Free abortions.
Yes, queen.
Free gender-affirming care for migrants.
Yes, queen.
Child tax credits for dogs.
Yes, queen.
Ban standardized testing.
Yes, queen.
Oh, yeah, like my ADD is so crazy. Get rid of those things, please.
Yes, okay. Queen, yeah.
Amazing. Different tax rate for white men.
Yes, queen.
Amen, sister. Love you. Love her energy. She's a yes queener.
Yes, queen. How is her walk with God? Don't know her soul. Can't judge. That's God's domain, but we can discern. Why do you think she's there? Because yes, queen. Who else says yes to every human desire? Right. Satan says yes to every human desire, and he'll give you ways to argue for it. Your wife really doesn't understand you, but she does. If your husband loved you, he wouldn't be on all these business trips. After all, it's just once. Killing a baby, it's just a clump of cells. But wait, aren't you just a larger clump of cells? Another example. This man made a dramatic black and white video to warn people that using cell phone cameras to record what teachers do in school and posting the footage online is, well, I'll let you hear him say it.
Chaya Raichik is a terrorist. She targets people based on how woke they are. It has nothing to do with protecting children. It has everything to do with taking away their education. The goal is to destroy public schools. As Donald Trump has said over and over again, he will eliminate the Department of Education. They do not want our children educated. They want them controlled. If we allow Chaya Raichik and her allies to do this in Ohio, she will come for your state next. it's not acceptable in America. You can't run some kind of Stasi secret police force in our schools. If anyone sees her or her operatives running around spying on your kids, call the cops. Call this out. Don't be silent. Chaya, f*** around with our kids and find out.
Oh, yeah, who's Chaya Ratchik? Yeah, she runs Libs of TikTok. It's domestic terrorism for kids to record what their taxpayer-funded teachers are saying in taxpayer-funded buildings, which we used to call public schools, which I now call government schools, because they're not public. He just told us. Showing the public what happens in public schools, well, that's terrorism. So David French says, our votes do not define our walk with God. Our combined votes have placed into power people who have allowed government schools to turn into places where teachers want to secretly talk to your kids about their sexual desires. How is our nation's walk with God? How are our votes? I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back on The Disciples' View. Back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I hope you heard that ad, Brandt. That guy is so good on the radio. And this is one radio guy to another. Brandt, I know you're not hearing this, but man, I really, really appreciate how God has gifted you. A total distraction. See, you know what? It's so funny. I am still that guy who just loves great radio. I'll tell you, okay, Randy, if I forget this, I got to write this down. See, I never plan what I'm going to say in the last segment, but I have got to share with you how I was blessed. I've never told you this story, how I was blessed to learn about great radio from one of the great radio people. No, I've talked about Rush Limbaugh many, many times. You know, guys, I've filled in for him for many, many, almost 200 times, like 170 times or something. But this is a guy I am now honored to say has called me a godson. I'll tell you some of the stories of what radio used to be. So if you love radio, you're about to hear some of the history of it and how I got gifted to drive around and be in a home of a guy who got it. Now I'm excited. Okay, let's do this. We'll start with our tradition in the last segment of thanking the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciples View presents...
The president takes shouted questions. I understand, John. I understand. I have dealt with this question about 3 times already. I understand.
The Tower of Babbling.
3 sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. Starting with clip number 1, Chief Washington Correspondent Jonathan Carl of ABC said this about Kamala Harris.
She really gave a speech that was designed to go at independents, moderates, disaffected Republicans, the vast majority of undecided voters in the country. A very interesting move and quite a contrast from the way she ran for president the first time when she tried to get the nomination 4 years ago. This is a Kamala Harris that sounded a little bit more like Maggie Thatcher or Ronald Reagan, especially on national security, than like Bernie Sanders.
Pardon me, here I am talking about great radio and devolving into laughter. Not even professional laughter. Wow. Like Maggie Thatcher or Ronald Reagan saying we're going to seize the patents of American companies. We're going to cap prices. That sounds so much like Ronald Reagan. Now, the answer in this next clip never comes. Because it's the question that's the news. So this guy, Charlemagne, who calls himself the God, that's Charlemagne the God. Does he think Kamala Harris is too important to speak to journalists?
Charlemagne, you've interviewed Kamala Harris.
Yep, a few times.
All right. Everybody's come on your radio show. Everybody has to come on your radio show. She hasn't done a big interview in a while here, and certainly not since announcing. Are you going to talk to her soon? What do you think? What do you think she should do? Or does she do better to ignore all those calls to talk and just keep doing what she's doing?
Now, this is a serious debate on CNN, and they're asking Charmaine this, who's had obviously a lot of people on this program, very successful man who calls himself the God. Don't like that part. I don't think you do either. This is a journalist saying, should the woman who has been placed into position, let me say it this way. Let me be accurate. Should the woman who seized power over the DNC by using the 25th Amendment to blackmail Joe Biden into stepping out of the race, who never received a single vote from the grassroots, who is not the nominee, who has been placed in that position, should she lower herself to do interviews with mere journalists? This is a journalist asking that question. Now, by the way, that same Dana Bash, guess what? She gets to have the first interview with Kamala Harris. It's going to be a taped interview, and Tim Walz is going to be there. Yeah, Tim Walz is going to join her. She can't do this alone. She cannot speak in an unscripted sense because she's so joyful. She's joyful. That laugh, it's just pure joy. You tape interviews for a reason. It's either scheduling, but that's not really an issue. Kamala Harris can be interviewed anywhere. CNN has all the money. They could fly anywhere to interview her at her convenience. So it's not really scheduling. Quality. So make sure that you're in a place where you get good quality. Again, mobile studio. Convenience? Nope. Here's why. I can't prove this, so you can accuse me of false witness, but I know how these things work, having worked in that circle. It's so it can be edited. I'm willing to bet you that they've made promises at CNN to make sure that Kamala Harris's team is involved in the editing. And if you think that's insane, let me remind you, the New York Times admitted that to get access to Barack Obama during his first presidential campaign, they agreed to let the campaign have final say over which quotes were put into articles and to help doctor the quotes. They admitted it because Barack Obama was a rock star. Speaking of Dana Bash, the last clip in today's Tower Babbling, CNN's Dana Bash should stop trying to debate her guests like Representative Mike Waltz.
As you well know, the Trump administration negotiated the withdrawal agreement from Afghanistan with the Taliban and the State Department.
A conditional agreement, and he left Bagram Air Base. He left 2,500 troops. His advisors came to him and said, the Taliban haven't lived up to it. And he said, fine, deal's off.
Boom. Your point's gone, Dana. It's a clean job. Rep. Mike Waltz did a good job. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word a computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things.
That was the Tower of Babbling on a Disciple's View.
And that's called the soft bigotry of low expectations, that quote from that Democrat. So I just told you, I was coming back and we heard that ad, Brandt was voicing that. I don't know Brandt's last name. I've heard him so often on the radio, but man, he's so good. And it just got me excited remembering great radio. So let me just tell you how this all came to be. I've shared with you the fact that I used to listen to Paul Harvey with my dad. Paul Harvey, news and comment, a good day. And now you know the rest of the story. Oh, he was so good. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that. The rest of the story was genius. Because even if you knew the story, you had to hear him tell it. And those three brothers were the Kennedys. And now you know the rest of the story. Spellbinding. So my dad would drive around, and I'd sit next to him. We'd be on hunting trips or going to football games, and we would always, no matter where we were, hear News and Comment, got to hear the rest of the story. Started my love for radio. I was blessed to meet a guy who is now my brother, every bit as much as if he were blood. His name is Matthew. His music is featured on the show. It opened the show. That's the music at the opening of the show is called On Top of the World, Matt Bruno. The show that the music that wraps it is called Do You Love Me by Matt Bruno. Wraps the show. And I met him in junior high. His dad has been a legend in the radio business, in the record business, had relocated from San Francisco and Los Angeles to Spokane for a semi-retirement. Gary thought he was leaving radio, thought he was leaving the record business, thought he could leave it behind, so he'd just go manage a small radio station. It was actually a very big radio station in a small market, and he revolutionized radio in our town. So I got to ride with him in the car. And I got to hear him say, guys, stop. Listen to this jock. Disc jockey. Listen to him. This is great radio. And he would tell us, and we would sit and listen. Matthew and I both loved radio. Listen to his delivery. Listen to the pacing. It's just like he's in the car with us. He's chatting with us. It's not performance. But listen to him when he performs. Listen to him when he performs. He would give us the gift of the same thing he would do with his team when he would sit and tell them, I like this presentation, I don't like this presentation. We were so impressed with this that Matthew and I decided to start creating fake radio shows. So in his room, Matthew had access, well, he was a fanatical saver of money, so most of this came from money he earned. He had a reel-to-reel recorder, brilliant musician. He would record in his room. We'd started to create fake radio shows on these reel-to-reels and do all these tight edits. This is back in the day where you had to cut tape with scissors to do edits. You use software for this now. And we created a radio show. My name was The Rhino. The Rhino. I don't remember what Matthew's name was, but I was The Rhino. And we would put music together with cuts from movies. We would record ourselves doing this. And it's like that guy said in the Star Trek movie, and boom, you'd have this cut from a Star Trek movie or Star Wars. We had this zoo-type morning show thing, and we loved it. We played it. We played it for Gary. He played it for someone at the radio station, a disc jockey. That's all we thought of it. Then one day, Matthew called me at home. You got to come over here. I was just having dinner. Todd, you got to come. I cannot believe they ripped us off. They ripped us off. I said, okay, I'll ask my mom. I was 16, could drive, so I drove over to his house. Walking, he goes, you got to hear this. You got to hear this. I recorded it. And Matthew gets out a recording of Gary's radio station. And their disc jockeys had stolen our ideas, not just our ideas, the exact sounds we used in the exact ways they stole our bits. This is my dad's going to be home. I'm going to confront him. So I'm in the room. Gary comes home. Now, Matthew's a very gentle man, a very loving man, very Christ-driven. But at this point, he was 16. His dad comes in the hall and goes, Dad, you owe me $5,000. And Gary says, what? You owe me $5,000. He goes, first of all, lower your voice. Don't point at me, son. Explain. The guys at the radio station ripped me and Todd off. That's ridiculous. These are some of the highest paid disc jockeys in the world. Some of the best. They didn't rip off a couple of 16-year-old kids. Do you have any proof of this? And then he looked over, Gary saw me. He says, well, you're witnessing a family argument. I go, yes, sir. I was scared of him. Very gentle man, but man, he was powerful. Yes, sir. Do you have proof? He pointed at me. I put my hands up. I'm not in this. Matt says, no, Dad, come in. He goes, change your tone. Dad, will you please come in? Please come into my room. Gary came into the room. Matthew sat him down. He played the bit from his radio station. Gary was the general manager, played it. And Gary grew ashen. He says, is that yours? And Matthew said, here's what we gave you that you played for them. Gary was ashen. They ripped you off. I can't believe they ripped you off. Guys, this is impressive. What? This is impressive that they wanted to rip off your work. I'll go to them on this. This was dishonest. They stole. We were not to steal. $5,000. And Gary said, I'm not going to give you $5,000. But I tell you what I will do. We're changing radio formats, and we're going to give away all the records we have that are classic rock. We're changing formats. I'll tell you what I will do. I will take you tonight to the radio station. You guys can have all the records you can carry out of the record vault in 3 trips. Oh, I don't think he anticipated us getting quite as many records as we did, because to this day I have over 2,000 LPs because of that. But do you know what else we got? An opportunity to sit in a world-class radio studio when everyone else was doing their weekend jobs, it's Arby's, and all work is honorable. 3 weekends in a row, we got to do nighttime radio on a classic rock radio station just before it changed formats. I was the rhino, just like in the tape we put together. I wish I could remember Matthew's name. I learned something much more important from Gary. I got to live in his home. The first intact marriage I'd ever seen up front. I got to watch him lead his home. I got to watch him lead his family in prayer. And I got to hear from him this one day when I was making a lot of money. I visited with him. He was congratulating me. And he said, Todd, you're going to learn something. There's always more you can buy. You're going to learn something else. None of it satisfies. Son, do not worship this stuff. It's meaningless. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations until God decides we can all speak again together. May the peace of the Lord that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.